Warning, the host of this podcast has a penchant for the pontification of puns and an altruistically alienating affection for alliteration. If you suffer weak constitution or get annoyed easily, you may want to seek prior medical advice. Or avoid this particularly perplexing podcast, as the host is unbalanced as a washer full of shoes. Salutations, my slumberless stoners of serendipitous circumstance. This is your dosing of joke, Jackpot, here with another episode of Chronic Insomnia Podcast. I'm here with, I can honestly say, the woman that got me into the industry the way I am. The reason I be who I is, Lydia Ensley. So Lydia, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are.
This is my least favorite part. I am here in Seattle. I have been in the ever-evolving cannabis industry, and when I got into it, it was still a movement. when Washington State and Colorado legalized is really kind of a focal point for most people, but I was one of the privileged that got to see quite a few years following up to that and the way that movement really started out here. I can't really say to Colorado, but that looked equally as interesting. Admittingly, I no longer participate necessarily in what we would consider as the 502 recreational market here in Washington. So some would call me a burnout. I would like to consider myself a reformer. I still like good cannabis. That's the first reason. but it's been a privilege to work in medical cannabis in some of its foundations. And it's even more exciting now to see the way some of the things that we were first finding out, say, 7 years ago, are hitting mainstream types of stores now as applicable remedies for normal everyday problems. I love seeing CBD sections in drugstores now, even though I have some interesting beliefs about CBD. So I've just done all sorts of things all over the industry, both what you would call black market and then above market.
Right. I mean, like anybody who is either kind of like self-made or did it without, you know, big financial backings or stuff like that, or kind of made it on their own, is going to have a little bit about that. Like, you kind of need that edge on, you know, the people with trust funds or the people with, you know,
right. Angel investors. I was 23 and a single mom living in Bellingham, and I came into it as a quasi self-proposed activist. I just hate that term now because so many people use it.
True. it's become trendy. It's like the thing. Like, oh,
I know. I'm an activist now. Woo! Activist in a box.
Back in my day, activist meant something.
Right. And so I would just say that my way of coping in life has always been to feel like I was making some sort of difference. I was that child that cried because there was dolphins getting caught in tuna nuts, you know? Yeah, a lot like that. But I had to pick like five things, right? And so at the age of 23, I was a single mom. I had a toddler. I wanted to be a social worker. I was very into like women's movements, being pro-choice. I was very against our government's interactions in Iraq at the time, and I was really outspoken.
Around the time I was in Iraq.
yeah, exactly. Right, I was that girl. right.
Right.
And it was really volatile. I mean, and it's funny to say this now, right? Because now we live in a society that's really volatile. But back in back that time,
but for totally different reasons, though.
Sort of. Yeah. Back then, it was really dangerous for me to be outspoken on those beliefs, even as like a 4'9 little female. If I wanted to have these beliefs and be out there as an activist, I would get threatened. Like, people will show up to pro-choice things with guns.
Yeah, did you hear about what's going on now in Oregon?
I mean, I think like, the better question is which thing just happened?
Well, I just heard about it. So I was talking to somebody because they got a friend out there. It's like crazy, crazy alt-right groups targeting Facebook profiles.
Yeah.
And going in like, so like that's, it's not one thing. It's something else people get all fucking crazy about. But go ahead, continue.
Right. We can get back to that too, because,
definitely.
Right. So cannabis seemed like a really kind of safe activism at the time. Like I could stand out in any part of the state, which in Washington, people only think of it as Seattle. But
yeah,
I tell you, I grew up 200 miles away from Seattle and it's rural as fuck. And it's conservative as fuck.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. Like it's not the crazy left blue state that everybody thinks it is. I mean, it's a lot more forward thinking and it is slightly more, you know, liberal than most, but there are a lot of deep rooted conservative beliefs in that state.
Yeah, and like literacy rates are low.
With as much as they love the libraries, like King County Library was one of the first libraries like I would spend days in. Like I would just go there. It's beautiful. It's fucking in the middle of a forest. And there's like comfy couches and shit. Like y'all motherfuckers should be reading in the future.
Well, where I grew up, they used the public library as the place to make the Jews have their services. So it is awesome. Dramatically different, not too far from here. And what I noticed right away,
you got like a mountain in between, or yeah. You know, where it's like 600 miles between your next city.
It's a range. It's a small range.
It's still a fucking mountain from Florida. All right, I'm from a goddamn swamp ass coral reef. All right. A big dirt pile is a fucking mountain to me. Like that's what we consider like a hilly area. I'm like, oh my god, it's so mountainous. So
right.
Anything is a fucking mountain. Hey, go ahead.
Cannabis was that like kind of bipartisan issue almost right away. Like, admittingly, conservatives had some moral conjecture at first, but they really warmed to it faster than any issue I'd worked on. And nobody brought guns to a cannabis rally where I'm all like, legalize weed, and nobody wanted to shoot me. It was like the first tagline ever that I'd ever yelled in public that somebody didn't want to like choke me for.
And that was, and a lot of that was also because like you don't want to get that fucking, that double charge. Like you don't want to get arrested for having weed in your pocket and a fucking gun because you know everybody there is carrying.
Right.
So that's what that was. It wasn't necessarily that it had like a calming effect or it was a more peaceful. It was just like, hey, I don't want two felonies.
Right. I mean, and like the libertarians kind of took that like state rights issue and this should be about like individual civil liberties. And so it was like an easy sell. Weed sold itself at that time as an issue. It just really needed people
to let people know about it.
Yeah, to like
just keep get that
up
word of mouth
the hype,
out there. Yeah,
keep,
exactly.
Circulating the same, because like at first it was like four movie stars that were willing to be like, yeah, I smoke weed, and now it's
Woody
like
Woody Harrelson was actually two of those movie stars.
Yeah. And now everybody does every late night.
They've
show,
got their own companies. Yeah, like Jim Belushi just started his. Of course, you got Tyson. Sam Elliott's got a CBD company. I know Keanu Reeves is starting one. Like everybody nowadays. Yeah, like that's ridiculous.
So it's a double-edged sword of where you're like, wow, I really wanted to normalize this, and then seeing what it looks like when we've normalized it a little more.
Well, but what's your opinion as far as like the two?
What do you mean?
Like, because I've talked to a few different people. I've talked to pharmacists and like owner business owners, and the general consensus is, you know, it needs to be as far as like the way medical is today in most states, like the way it was in Washington when I was in there, the way it is in Oklahoma here and Colorado, stuff like that. Like that's the way recreational should be, and then the medical side needs to be a little bit more like it is in Florida, vertically integrated, so a little bit more strictly, you know, regulated because it's treated as like a prescription. But then you've got the rec side that, you know, is more open and you know, the private side. So what's your, like, once everything is across the board decriminalized and legal, what do you think? Do you think it should just be, you know, Wild West however it is, or do you think that it should fall under something a little more structured like that?
Oh, I'm gonna mess everybody up on this. I think actual all the way around vertical integration is the only way to allow for mom and pop and cottage industry to at all exist or be effective in either recreational or the boutique medicinal markets.
So like far more structure to the whole thing?
They should be allowed to produce their own product, grow it, manufacture it out, and sell it on site, like farmer to person,
right,
under the right qualifications. Like that should be the ultimate goal, I feel like, for everybody.
But well, I mean, that's understandable, but like in Florida is where vertical integration, that's how it started, and it's impossible to do it without, you know, billions of dollars or millions of dollars. I mean, just to get the license alone is $100,000 non-refundable fee, and you still have the possibility to get denied. So
right.
the vertical integration, as far as the state goes, the only problem, like I agree with the concept of it, but you know, because that does that, then that gives you like that farm to table type feel, but, or you know, like a place can be self-sustaining, but then you take the chance of, if it's regulated by the state, you get something like that where the state's like, all right, you need to pay us this, 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 and this. There's four different governing bodies, four different zoning, you know, laws that you have to adhere to and shit like that. So seems a little.
Well, I mean, it's interesting too, because in Washington, we had the like so-called lottery system that was supposed to be fair. So as soon as you get into fees for licensing, that's where I think you should have to, like, it should be intolerably low for anyone to apply for this license. What should be like the heavy hitter financial gains for those counties and cities would be the actual licensing of opening the business.
Okay.
But you shouldn't, like, just to get in the hat, you shouldn't have to pay money. I think that's been, even here where it was, we're just going to pick it magically out of the hat, these larger companies came in and just paid the $5,000 a pop at the time several times, and they didn't care if they lost on, you know, five of those licenses. So, and then it wasn't for another year and a half until they even kind of got the idea of like integrating what was already a market, already a structured market to some extent, into the system. And they used these words that ended up becoming pretty cannibalistic, where they said a merit-based system. This merit-based system. And it was kind of a slap in the face to businesses that had already been open for like five fucking years.
They didn't have any sort of like grandfathered in?
No, it wasn't like that. It was like you still had to get on the same proving grounds as everybody else.
That's fucked.
And a lot of it was highly based off of, could you afford to outfit a warehouse based off of these specs that this regulating agency asked these few individuals, what is a grow and how should it function?
See, that's what I think the problem with, like, that's the double-edged side of it being regulated at like at such a small level, like it can go all the way down to a county level. Like there's a lot of good things because it's what helps it progress. So you, like, if you've got one county that doesn't like it but everybody else does, that's fine. Well, that one county, you don't have to sell it in there and everybody else does. But then on the other end of that, you get stuff like that where it's like, okay, you're doing it one way and it's so crazy structured and restricted and regulated in this area, but then the next state over, it's wide the fuck open.
I mean, it doesn't really help the idea of diversion to keep, you know, a difference broadband in the way we regulate cannabis state by state. But that's
I just think there needs to be a little bit of a base SOP, like things, just not necessarily things that you have to do, but things that you can and can't do. Just because time tested, we realized that certain practices just kind of, I mean, look at California. California collapsed in on itself when everything went legal, because they had, you know, relied so much on the black market or so much on, you know, the way that they had done things for so long that by the time it got opened up to the rest of the world, they were just like, oh shit, we can't do this anymore. Same thing with Canada. So there needs to be a little bit of like,
we overhanded on the producer processor side here in Washington at first. We handed those out at a pretty rapid rate for pretty cheap.
Yeah. Cause I remember when I got my card, the doctor was like, hey, just put your license in, you know, wherever you're working in the grow room, and that just adds to it. So it's like they were just telling even patients, just like, hey,
right,
use your shit for that.
But here in Washington, medical died.
I can imagine.
Pretty much, yeah. As as recreational took full effect. And it was just really sad to see in this state, particularly the way that that which had brought it forward wasn't really respected in the end.
Right.
And as I see other states approach these topics, like, it's really hard for me to be optimistic for them, because I know that the main goal is that, like, people should not be arrested for this.
Right.
We should just stop arresting people for it. And that should absolutely be on a federal level. That shouldn't even be
a state by state
issue. Fine. You want to make over an ounce a crime, fine. But I think rational adults across the entire US can say that possession of under an ounce of cannabis, like,
well, honestly,
no one should,
like,
have to go to jail for that.
And it you're right. But that's again, you know, the good thing about the state-to-state thing. A lot of places I've been reading articles where they're either, you know, limiting it to, like, you know, some ridiculous, like, $5 fine or something like that, or they're publicly announcing that these are very low to little or to no priority at all. You know,
right.
Like, all of these
priority stuff is really the way progressive municipalities are going to be able to, like, support legalization going forward.
Because right. That's why I was talking to a guy in Virginia Beach, and they don't have medical, they don't have recreational, but it's decriminalized, and it's become a zero priority, which I thought was interesting. That was the first time that I'd ever heard of a place where there was nothing in the books at all for any type of cannabis use, yet it's decriminalized. And, you know, like a $25 fine if I think he said, like, you know, like above an ounce or an ounce and a half or something like that.
I think what that really means is that the states don't want to have to deal on the petty crime level. They're willing to take on larger criminal enterprises, but they're just not, they no longer have the resources to keep dealing with, like, petty.
Exactly.
Consumption charges, essentially.
They didn't in the first place, really, but now they've got to deal with, you know, the publicity and the lawsuits and all that shit, you know, for popping somebody with weed.
Right.
So what was your, like, I know life, you know, does things to people. What was your overall goal? Because I know you did accomplish a lot. Like, I remember, because as I was leaving, it was becoming recreational. And I remember, you know, it was the whole thing with that. I know that you worked really hard on the SOPs and stuff like that on that. So, like, what, you know, what is it that you wanted to see, still want to see for the, you know, what was the movement?
I would say at the time, like, that you left was probably the higher point of my career before.
Right. We had just won a dope award, motherfuckers.
Right. Yeah. I was a red carpet award winner. People wanted to know who I was. I was interesting. I was running a...
You're still interesting. Shut up.
No, I've achieved boring on a level that I'm super okay with.
That's interesting now. That's like, once you settle in, like, you seem boring to yourself, but other people are like, you're so interesting.
Well, they must be really boring then.
Yeah. Hey, everybody's just sitting around the fucking home nowadays, so everybody's boring.
I was just one of, like, really few fish, I think, to begin with. So it gave me the advantage to know who was doing what at the time. I was a little tiny girl getting into it. And by the time I was 27, I was running one of the first business-licensed medical cannabis dispensaries, which was CPC, which is where you were with me, which no longer stands as an access point.
Yeah, like, I've noticed they've kind of died out. Like, I haven't heard anything from either of them in a while. Like, I still talk to Greg, and he's doing stuff, but I haven't heard anything from the two of them.
Right. Well, they sold their retail license, which was essentially the business that I operated, which was, like, the retail side of the business, which we handled patients. We were definitely gearing up to be able to do recreational.
Because that's what I was doing, was just making everything in bulk.
Right. And we had, we had that vertical integration. Like, we were able to grow. Mm-hmm. Then we were able to turn said grow product into concentrate that was then able to be made into an assortment of other products. Granted, there was a more open market. We were definitely taking in product from other medical businesses at the time.
Right, but like,
and we had hope for the future, like that with legalization would come better licensing and structure for medical that would be comprehensive that we could go forward with. And I moved to pre-packaging. Like, I remember the days of like Chopstick,
Oh God, yeah.
Chopstick wars.
I love my Chopsticks, all right? Like,
I'm really good with them now. I'm really, really good with them, all because of marijuana. Like,
I had the custom ones. Like, I made a show of it. And I was like, I was making tips, dude. Fuck yeah. Like, any chance I got to be an entertainer and show my shit, I had fucking lightsaber Chopsticks.
I had the metal Korean Chopsticks. Oh, yeah. They were very cute and snappity snap.
I remember the days of like it was funny because the last place I worked at, we, it was all fancy. We had the lab, we had all the machines and shit like that. And we had this, the rocket box. It's this just giant fucking box that it's got different attachments to it. And you can fill it with cones of different sizes and it just vibrates and it shakes all the fucking, all the weed into the cones. And I'm just like, I remember doing this shit fucking twice as good with just a styrofoam box, or like sitting there next to you in the back office, just fucking rolling shit for days and days and days on end. And we were still doing better than half the places with these fucking multi-million dollar backings. I'm just like, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. Medical days were good at the height in Washington. We were impacting people and we were able to support probably the largest crew of people, of most businesses at the time.
Yeah.
That was back in what, like 2015?
Well, no, that was because I left in 15. That was like 2010 to 2015. Like, you and I met, I believe it was like 11 or 12, because I started working at New Millennium in 2010.
Okay. I get so confused at this point anymore because, like, I really got into everything 2009, and there was no existing industry or businesses in Whatcom, Bellingham, where I lived at the time. So I had to come to Seattle to have any idea of what was happening with anybody else.
Right.
And that was back in 2009. So probably by 2012 was when I met you.
Yeah, it was around.
That's my guess.
Because yeah. I just left. I'd been working at New Millennium for a little while, and I just left Barnes & Noble. Because I moved to Northgate, or I moved out of Northgate and I moved to Lake City. Because I moved like 6 times in 6 years in Washington.
When you left, that was like the last of a string of me just being appointed into management in businesses, which is also how you met me.
Right. And that's why I didn't like you in the beginning. I was like, who the fuck is this? Like, I've been working. I've been busting ass. I like got I was doing this shit. Then she comes in, I'm like, who the fuck is this chick?
And I have a really beautiful resume, right? I mean, yeah. I've worked for everyone and they all hope I keep their secrets. So they all.
Right, I'm stacking that stuff up too. I'm like, who can I blackmail? No,
it's
just.
It's never an open conversation, but I'm sure that's why some of my first bosses gave me good references.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm sure that's the only reason Greg still talks to me.
Back in the day, things were so gray area on everything that...
Yes, you couldn't really do any, like, legal contracts or deals. I remember at New Millennium, we were a fucking t-shirt company if anybody wanted to pay with a card. Like, somebody would come in and be like, dude, how the fuck did I spend $600 on t-shirts? I'm like, nah, that's us, man. It's just so we can pay our employees and our taxes and shit.
Give me just a second. My child is knocking at my door.
Okay, so we're gonna need to pause. That's a pause. Pause. We're pausing. We're not doing anything because she's taking care of her maternal responsibilities. So just sit back and relax and we'll be back in a few seconds.
The life of the pandemic with a puppy and a 13-year-old.
And we're back. Okay, so yeah, go ahead.
Catch me up. Where were we?
I ranted about something, but I ranted about a lot of things.
oh, yeah, me coming in as your boss.
Oh, yeah, like, who the fucking shit?
Right. And that by that point was like the third gig in the movement that I had been appointed to from an outside to come in and like shake shit up.
Right.
Which really now is called professionalizing. And it's how kind people of what, like,
it's
from
what
Zooming
my firm,
get jobs now.
Yeah. And it's what I've kind of based, like I'm working on my consulting firm. And that's kind of what it is. It's just like, I don't necessarily want to pick one particular thing. I call it adaptive consulting, like whatever you need from soil to sail. You know, I can just come in and be like, you're fucking that shit up.
Consulting ended up one of those phrases like activists that I just try not to.
I know. I try not to, but it's still legit. And that's what my contracts say. So I've always wanted to be a consultant. I've always wanted to be somebody who doesn't actually do anything specifically, just comes in there and tells other people my opinion and get paid for it. I mean, I'm a very opinionated individual, so I figure I might as well get paid for it because it's not like I can really go out and do anything right now.
At least this I think at this point I would advertise myself as a lone gun, you know? I mean, I would rather just call it what it is at this point.
Maybe I'll do some Wild West advertising. That's literally why I came out here to Oklahoma, because I read an article and it described this place as the Wild West of cannabis. And
yes,
since I've been out here, I've met a few patients. I've seen I got some really nice stuff. And there's good as far as programs for setting up to get your card. Like, it takes forever to get a fucking license here. But they also have, if you're an existing patient, you can apply for a 30-day temporary medical card in the state of Oklahoma as long as all your shit's still active and valid. So I can do that for work while I'm waiting to get my, you know, my actual license. But the prices are the same, the products are the same, the variety. Like I looked at a square area of weed maps and it was just fucking stacked with shit. Like, it's everywhere, you know. So it coming out here reminded me so much of working in, you know, like Washington and Oregon in like 2012, 2013, 2010 and shit like that. So like it's got a lot of the same potential, and the city itself, like the state and the government, they're actively progressive. Like, they're putting money back into the communities. They just had their first art and music festivals, you know, like a year or so ago, a couple of months ago. They're working on conventions. There's a lot of revitalization programs and shit like that. So there's a lot of potential and possibility. And with the industry, like, you know, you go around and there's fucking billboards everywhere with giant weed leaves, you know, like weed dispensaries and pot leaves and shit on them. And there's like the actual like advertising and, you know, healthy competition and shit like that.
I can't even tell the difference sometimes now between like a lifestyle ad for, you know, an ED medication or like a cannabis product.
That's interesting. I would like to see how it is out there. I haven't been out there in a while.
It's the same dude running in both. both ads, I swear. What I'm finding interesting now is seeing YouTube ads out here, because we still haven't figured out advertising for a legal market in Washington. It's pitiful. Right.
It's, well, I mean, everybody, that's kind of like the last thing on anybody's mind, because of the fact that, like, you do have, you know, the weed map and the Leafly's, and there's a lot of new ones. There's one coming out, Buddy Jane. I know it's already on Apple. They're coming out on Android. That's like a social network. It's pretty cool. And there's, you know, there's the different hiring firms and stuff. So I think that advertising and marketing, because of the fact that, like, for the last 40, 50 years, it's been opposed strongly by the government, and still just through word of mouth or just because people know what it is, it makes, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars a year against the odds. So I think advertising and marketing is kind of like, we'll just wait until it's done and they say that we can do it, and then we'll worry about that later.
Right. Well, I mean, I look forward to the day that we don't have to be so symbolic. Like, the Green Cross thing is just...
Yeah. There's not that much like in Florida, and I haven't really seen a whole lot of that out here. So that's one thing. Like, everybody's got their own logos and symbols, and there's a lot less of the most of that Green Cross you just see on like the doctor's offices and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, when we were going between New Millennium to CPC, would be the time that I would say that we went in Washington from, say, like 150 shops in state to like 285 shops in the greater Seattle area. Like, it in 2 years,
right.
The growth happened so fast because we legalized, but we hadn't licensed yet. And so everybody was like, okay, we'll just set up a medical business and we'll just transfer right over. And that wasn't at all how it worked out. But in the interim, there was all these new cannabis businesses. And when you talk about weed maps, like just going, I remember those days. It was.
Yeah. Like I was driving in, and like I had done some research before, but I hadn't actually looked at the app. So like I was driving in, and I was like, oh, I need to just, you know, check some stuff out and see where things are and whatnot. And I hit the maps button and I was just like, just in my area. And it was, I cried. Like, I don't know if you can.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Yeah. That's just in like the Southern Tulsa Broken Arrow area. That's not even like the entire state. And that's like shit on top of shit on top of shit. Like it made me happy. They're literally like three within walking distance of my apartment.
Is that like just regulated to the city of Tulsa, or is the whole state pretty?
Oh yeah, no, like the whole state is on board.
I know, because I help out Seattle Hemp Fest, or at least in previous years have. I've been really lazy this year. They had said that there was an Oklahoma Hemp Fest.
Like that's coming up. Like yeah. That's just northern, like Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And the thing is, like, it doesn't look like a lot, but Oklahoma City is 600 square miles when you can really fit the entire population and buildings in like 60 square miles. It's one of those. It's vastly spread out. Like, there's a lot of empty open space in this state just because, you know, it's kind of empty. But like, it looks like that. It looks like it's all populated to those areas, because that's really where the only population is in the major cities and shit like that.
Right.
But it's one of those, like, I came in and I think it's only been like 2 years, year or so that they've had it. But they've adopted it wholeheartedly, and they're very progressive and smart about it. And it seems like the patients are very active in, you know, like the legislation and what's going on and staying updated and informed and stuff like that. So it's you know, one of the main reasons I'm out here is because it gives me a lot of hope for the future, and it gives me more opportunities, you know, to work and shit like that.
I would hope, since it's been, since there's been so many people that have legalized before them, so that they're able to kind of see the pitfalls,
right,
that some states are still trying to work out.
And they're one of the few, because like Florida did everything exactly opposite. Like, it is a prescription. Like, the card lasts for a year, but the prescription lasts for 7 months, but you only got 2.5 ounces for these 3 months. So if you use that 2.5 ounces before 3 months is over, you got to wait until it renews itself, and then you got to renew it. But then you have to pay the state and the doctor again, and it could still get denied, even though if you had it already. And it's just, it's ridiculous. Like a
Freddy gram. 7-Eleven does not charge that. And
exactly.
Only hope. That
and a gram is $55. I'm like $55 a gram. Yes. Yes. Or like $50, $60 for an eighth. No. Of like non-cure, no cure. Cause it's got to get out quick. Like, I've been in different places. They don't cure. Like, there's maybe one place, but that's because all they did was flower. But like, I've been to places, I've worked in places where we have harvested it on Monday, dried it for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It has been out by Monday. It has been trimmed and out. It harvested on Monday and then packaged and on the floor by next Monday. Still $50-$60 for an eighth. I was like, nah, I came back here, it was like $8 a gram. I got a half a zip of Acapulco Gold for $100. I'm like, yep. I'm staying here. Yeah. the one thing, industry-wise, not cultural, not, you know, the movement, not the history, just the one thing currently in your state, industry-wise, that, you know, like, just pisses you off and you feel needs to change or has to change, or you have an idea or something, you know, that you just want to get out there and just be like, motherfuckers, you know. We'll cut that list down, because I know it's a big one, just the one.
All right, I'm like, that's a okay. All right. I I really am gonna have to light this joint.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, you know. Otherwise, it's not a very true show. I mean, we gotta get that. We gotta get that in there somehow. I gotta get my money's worth out of that even though I didn't pay anything for it.
I wish that they allowed the consumer better ways of being able to identify what they're buying. Because out here now, with the way packaging is, even sometimes with the way visibility is on the packaging, consumers are almost entirely reliant upon numerical value of the testing of these products. We have cannabinoid testing out here. We say that we test for pesticides, even though there has been a lot of other studies that indicate that maybe we don't.
Yeah, so like more analytical transparency, more restrict, like more requirements as far as what, you know, the producer needs to give out and what, you know, they need to be able to have access to.
For sure. I think when somebody comes online with a product out into the market, they need to be able to really present to the consumer all the viable information. And that does include the terpenoid profiles, which is something that is almost now exclusive to just concentrate manufacturers. And in some part, that's due to that they can order synthetic terpenes and enhance their product.
I hate that shit so much.
And then produce it as something that is high in terpenes, which is incredibly dishonest. And you guys are fucktards. I'm going to say that. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I hate you for all your flavored product shit, all of your CBD that no customer can necessarily test the efficacy on, and you still charge more money for it. That's dishonest and wrong. It
and
doesn't
the most ridiculous
cost
thing,
any more money.
Because terps are in everything. Like you can find terps in anything, which is why I think it's ridiculous. Because I've known some places that are doing synthetics as well, and yeah, that's the next step on that is synthetic cannabis, and I think that's the Skynet of the cannabis world. Honestly, I really do think that somebody needs to make some sort of movie about like the Dankinator. I don't fucking know, but no, like I agree with you wholeheartedly that's
people are doctoring their products with like CBD isolates and with foreign terpenes, and they're not required to necessarily tell that to consumers. And if I just have one more thing, I would say fucking stop using neem oil. Even in veg, I can taste it. I can taste it. I can always taste it.
You're bougie as fuck, though. As far as that goes, you're bougie as fuck.
It's true. I've been running under the pen name of Canna Snob for a long time, just because I feel like it's better to have your expectations like on the table.
Definitely not an expectation. That's a label. That's just letting everybody know. Be like, this was the type of person I am.
Right. I'm going to be disappointed in you.
Right. Be like, it doesn't matter. It has nothing against you. I just have impossible expectations.
Right. Which is now kind of where I find myself in life, because I have these impossible expectations. I literally have to be part of the whole process of the cannabis that I consume somehow.
And that's what I got from you. Like that's honestly the way that I look at it. That's why I'm in the industry, because if I have the ability to affect what I'm doing, or if I have the ability like to you know, play a part in the shit that I'm making because I want to make it as good as possible or know everything about it, then, you know, like that's what I'm doing. So I can honestly say that I got that trait from you. Like that's why I'm in the industry and I've stayed in it, because I'm never going to stop smoking weed, but I'm also going to make sure that I get the best possible shit because I have hands in it.
Because I know that it exists and I can't
right,
go
exactly.
back.
Exactly.
I can't go back.
You've ruined me for everything else.
Yeah. And that has become my life now. It's troublesome for me, and it's I hesitate to say this because I'm sure that in other places it's not like this. But in Washington, even in the black market before legalization, and even really before medical became a thing, street weed was still better weed than most of the nation had.
Yep.
Right. But we were sitting here as pretentious millennial kids being like, is that Beasters? Did you
technically,
get
Beasters? Technically, I'm a Xennial. I'm better than millennials. I'm a little bit older than them.
Whatever. We have the same birth year, right?
I don't know. So what is it that you want to, like, what are your hopes? Like, you know, for anything, for the movement, for the entertainment industry part of it, for the business side of it, for medical, what are your overall hopes?
They're giving it away for free. I know that sounds so corny, right? And it is literally the biggest problem I have with being employed in the industry now, is that I don't think that sick people should have to pay for something.
There are a lot of places, and like there's groups going on in Florida, the Buds for Vets. There's a store in Michigan, like a mother and daughter owned store that give it out to, you know, like homeless and you know, patients and stuff like that.
And I have flawed systems like that. It's just I found that in California and in Washington and in Oregon, as soon as we legalized and the recreational market moved in, the compassion.
Oh, absolutely.
Dried up. It was gone. There was
because then you get the cannabis tourism. Then you get those.
Well, no one classified it.
Right, because you get those places that have done it for a while, so they have everything already set up, so they can immediately move into cannabis tourism. I mean, look at Vegas. Vegas takes any state's valid card. Like, you can go there. So it's like, you know, it's blatant. That's why they did it. They did it because, all right, we've already got this structure set up. We know what we're doing. We've got the, you know, the infrastructure and everything in place, and, you know, we've got the product and the influx. So why do we have to worry? Like, why are we going to do this now? Because now we've got people coming from all over the country. Because it's a thing now. Like, it's like people aren't afraid to talk about it. It's not a taboo subject. It's not like, oh, you know, like Greg and Tanya went off to the fucking Poconos and smoked a joint on the balcony and shit like that. Like, no, like, you could go to fucking Vegas and have like a Canator package. You can go to Washington and California and charter a bus and drive around the fucking states, you know, hotboxing a fucking tour bus. You know, like, that's legal and shit now. So unfortunately, you're going to see that, and especially it's going to be in the bigger, more developed places, because they're going to be expected to continue to, you know, to lead and to be ahead.
Right. Well, for being a head state here in Washington, it's still not legal for you to grow your own as 21 and over.
They'll lose money. That's going to be the last holdout of a lot of places.
I mean, and that's arguable too, friend. Like, how many people have we known that were like, I'm going to grow this plant. I'm going to take it home and I'm going to grow it.
It's the possibility. It's not necessarily that they'll do it. It's the possibility, and it's the ability to do it. Like, the government is scared, because look at all of the self-sustaining hemp farmers. Look at all of the, you know, the look at the fact that it was an underground movement for the entirety of its life up until the last like couple of years. The fact that it was grown against, you know, the government's will. It was grown in secret. It was grown out everywhere. Like, in the 90s, like, in the whole West Coast had problems because people were just dropping seeds everywhere, and you got random pot plants popping up and shit like that. So it's not necessarily that you and I know that people will do it. It's the possibility of, or it's giving the public the ability to become self-sustaining. So it's the government knows. They're like, no, not, it's not like the second it's done, you know, 95% of the world becomes fucking farmers and they're going to do their own shit. No, it's the fact that they have that possibility, and that scares the government. Like, it's not necessarily that the government knows that anybody's going to do anything in particular. That doesn't scare them. It's the possibilities of what can be done with the freedoms voted upon.
Right. Well, I mean, but most states at least legalized for 6 plants. Like,
yeah. Here's, you're, not 12, actually.
You're not a danger to anybody with your 6 little plants out in your backyard.
You are if you form a collective or a cooperative.
Or, you know, you use like 8 truck beds and scrog those suckers out across a football field.
So like, all right. So that reminds me of a story. All right. The last place that I worked at, we ended up renting a facility in Tampa from a guy named, what was it? It was Farmer Bill, I think they called him, or some shit like that. But he couldn't be associated with the company at all because he had a history. Ooh. But I drive up to this facility, and it's a large, just, you know, normal industrial loading facility. It's got the big loading bays for the tractor trailers and stuff like that. And there's like 6 tractor trailers parked up against it, and they're like FTD flour and shit like that. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. Da, 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 da. I go inside, and like, it's an open facility, and it's got the grow room in one side with the bay doors and everything. And then you look over and I see the loading bay, and they're affixed, and there's doors and everything there. It was the fucking, It was the trim rooms and the drying rooms and the harvesting rooms. All of these tractor trailers were parked up against the building and affixed permanently to the side of this building. While they still had valid tags, they still had all the parts. They were totally serviceable, but they were permanently affixed to the side of these buildings because it was where the fucking trimming and the drying and shit took place. It was like, this is a Bond building. This is fucking awesome. This is like a Black Ops facility. That's why this guy can't be anywhere around it, because this place had been set up a little bit before it was legal to do so.
Yeah, probably. I mean, here they used to just sink it below pools and stuff. Like,
you can't do that in Florida. Like, you can't dig because we're a coral reef. So you dig too deep and it's, you know, you just get fucking seawater and swamp ass.
That's gross.
I hate that place. God, Florida's like, all right, like if you take a curling iron that shorts out a lot and you wrap it in a hot towel and you heat it up just a little bit and then jam it down the back of your ass crack. That's the best way I can describe Florida. In all aspects, in all manners, in any way, living there, knowing people there, traffic, all of it is a damp, hot curling iron down the back of your ass crack.
I was born and bred in Washington, mm-hmm. and I have absolutely never wanted to go to Florida. Never wanted to be in Florida.
Yeah, well, I didn't really have choices, all right, because my fucking Jersey family members moved down to Florida.
And I was right, well, and that's the only reason I feel like if you're up somewhere like here that you go to the South is if perhaps you have family there, you were born there, or you just don't mm-hmm. know any better.
That's why I'm dead center. Like, I moved myself dead center into the country. Like, literally, there's a place, that Four Corners place is not too far from here. I'm right down the street from Route 66. I am smack dab in the heart. I fucking love it. There's there's, like, I see mountains over there. I see fucking, you know, like, it's been, like, dry. There's no humidity. There's no humidity. There's, y'all don't understand. There's no humidity. None. My ass is so dry. It's so dry. All right.
The fold on the back of my ears just twitched when you said that.
Sweet. And it's crazy, crazy cheap. Like, I got a brand new 800 square foot apartment for $695 a month. All included.
I don't even remember rental.
The average pay for like bud tenders or trimmers or just like base starting out is like $12, $13 an hour. So anybody thinking about coming out here and working in the industry, you're more than welcome, because there's plenty of fucking space and everything is cheap. And it's a gas state. You know how much I paid for gas the other day? Guess how much I paid for gas the other day?
$173.
I drive an SUV. That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't want it anymore. The plague has, there's no reason to really go anywhere.
This is true. But I'm just saying, once the world decides, you know, to wise the fuck up and stop fucking around and let this shit, you know, play out, then I'm still going to be here. And I'm going to have more money because I'm going to save up.
Cannabis has been deemed an essential service in America.
Not the next show, but the next show after that, the guest on there, we actually talk about that. Like, he was crazy excited, or, and like, he loved, you know, it was awesome. We talked about the whole COVID thing. And yeah, like, that's a huge thing. And I was like, if nothing else, if none of the other countless reasons why cannabis is amazing and should be, you know, should not be bullied the way it has been, if not the fact that, you know, now it you know, has a positive effect on the one thing currently wiping out millions of people on this planet.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of studies that are.
Well, he was talking about, it was like they did a study on mice, and they, you know, they took this batch and they split it in half, mm-hmm. and they infected both of them, but they had exposed the mice, half the batch, to cannabis. And the mice that were exposed to cannabis with the oils, I believe, they were cured. All the mice that weren't exposed, that were still infected with COVID, died. All the mice that were exposed to COVID and then treated with cannabis survived. Like, all of them.
Yeah, I had read some things kind of particulating down to CBD being the trigger point. So
yeah.
Yeah, and that came out of Canada, but it's been hard to actually get Canada health, like...
They're having a lot of trouble with kind of the cannabis and some other things. They're having some
difficulty. I just think it's my internet having a lot of problems pulling down, like, any Canadian URLs at the moment.
Well, you gotta do it in French. And then I know that that's a thing. I don't know if that's like a cyber law, but it may be. Like, I don't know. I'm really high. All right. So, what do you miss about mainstream? Like you know, the heady days of when everybody put canna in front of something and it didn't make you cringe.
Well, I mean, here's the deal. Like, I got into it to legalize it. I found my heart in it when I worked with the kid patients there at CPC. That was ultimately the thing I think that took all of the stress of going through everything that we went through as a business and kind of as a movement worth it. That's a real component that I think 90% of voters have compassion for, is the use of cannabis products for children with seizure disorders. Right. That was the highlight for me. That was the thing that I think made it feel the most worth it. And still to this day, I do help people undergoing chemo and radiation through their cancer therapies with cannabis oil concentrates. It's really not affordable for the average person to go and buy a presumptive 60-day supply for their treatment through cancer therapy. Yeah. It's not affordable for them to do that. So for the past 5 years since I've left the industry, I give away RSO if I come across it, and I do come across it a lot. So I give away a lot of RSO to people.
So if you had the opportunity to get back into it and to, you know,
that's all I would want to do, is just give away cannabis.
So like the charity. Charity foundations. I mean, no, like they're like, yeah. I've dealt with a lot of people, and I've dealt with a few different companies that offer those programs and shit like that. Cause I, when I was still in Florida, like I helped out with a lot of the VA and the veterans groups and shit like that, to, you know, for the Buds for Vets and shit like that. So like, is that something that you would enjoy?
The activist in me is tired of having to argue about the validity of such a program. Like, when there's a program up and like people have already argued about it enough, because if people can't see the reason why there should be voucher systems, why there should be some sort of system for people to be able to use this for free, I can't have that argument. But I'm so ready to like get on projects to actually make it happen.
Okay.
But I'm tired of the arguing. For years I had to hide that I had dreadlocks so that I could go to my state capitol and talk about cannabis, you know?
Right, yeah.
Because they didn't want to hear from a dready girl.
Right, no, they didn't want that. They didn't want that at all.
Right. And now my dreads are free flying and I love it. So it's up to probably this oncoming entrepreneurial newer generation of kid to argue the validity of these systems. And I hope they're created.
Well, how married are you to Washington?
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah.
I have roots here. Now the education is kind of like a you could do it from anywhere. That does open up a lot more possibilities.
Right.
But having a 13-year-old, and now like I sell weed from my couch for the same cost to me as what would have been working part-time anywhere. So
it's understandable.
Right. I don't want to like go back to the horse race.
Nobody would. I like that's one of the reasons I came out here, is because I was fighting in Florida and I was trying to, you know, change it, and it was just, I'm too, like, it's eventually going to get there. It will. Like, the movement is gotten so much momentum, and it's, we're like 46 states have something, 32 states have at least, you know, medical. We got, you know, 15 or a dozen or so with recreational and shit. So it's going to happen. Like, it's going to. So, like, I'm not going to spend my 30s fighting in a state that I fucking hate. Like, I have escaped Florida so many goddamn times. It's, I'm never going back. I will die before I go back to Florida.
And it's crazy for me to think that there are states that are still fighting that original battle. And yeah. I think that those battles in particular are worthy of seasoned activists' time to go to those states and really help fight the battle.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not me anymore.
Yeah. Like, I'm just not at that place in my life, Matt. Like, I have to worry about myself and everything. And now I'm free. I know that that's a horrible thing to say, but I'm free. I can say that now. I've come to terms with it.
They don't.
But like, I want to work in the industry. I want to do my shit. Like, I've got a message. I've got something that I want to say. I've got something that, you know, like that I feel that, you know, needs my attention. So if I get to a point where I can use that to, you know, talk to some fucking senator or, you know, get something, you know, out there passed, then great. But right now I kind of have to be a little selfish and, you know, focus on my shit.
Right. And there's just so much going on right now. In so many places, yeah. I think it's probably really hard for people to keep up with cannabis news and especially moves and legislation for cannabis.
Yeah. Well, this was wonderful, and we have to do this a lot more often. I mean, not necessarily on the show. I know that you're weird and you're self-deprecating when you don't need to be. But no, we need to catch up more. And I'm not that far away. Like I said, I'm in the middle of the country now, so.
I have friends who still have family in Tulsa and who do travel to Tulsa. So it's a chance that I could someday come to Tulsa.
Broken Arrow.
It won't be for the right reasons.
I don't even know if you're
chill. You know.
You get to see Wilson again.
Yeah, I'm a new puppy owner, so it's weird adapting to having a dog. I guess I love think him. About that.
I'll never not have a dog ever again. People suck. Dogs are awesome.
Yeah, well, that's why I named him Boyfriend.
You got to be careful, man, because some people take the wrong connotation, especially in Washington. I know that there's a subculture there.
Oh, well, I don't care. He barks at anyone who comes near me, and that's pretty much about all I need right now.
That works.
All right,
Pookie.
All right,
I love you. It was wonderful. You. Thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, anytime.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the shows. Appreciate everything. It's because of you guys that we're on here. Go ahead, mjbulls.com. Check out the entire lineup of amazing shows that they have on there. Tune in next time. I don't know who I'm going to have on, but I'm sure it'll be somebody with something to say. So once again, thanks for listening. Chronic Insomnia Podcast. Tune in. Toke up. Thank you.